Hello and welcome to episode 56 of Fresh Out of Tokens. Tanya isn't with us. She had to go to a convention I think she's at I've been seeing her tweets all day. Podcasting networking thing. So I'm David, helming the ship alone for this week, and I am joined by our awesome guest. Is it Johnny or Joni?
It's Johnny.
Johnny J. Before we get into our usual questions, I should probably read the legal boilerplate that we usually begin with. We have teas and other items in the I Need Diverse Games spreadshirt shop. We're splitting the profits from that 50-50 with Chachi Bobanks, who designed our awesome logo. There's a blog to complement the show. You can follow us at outoftokenscast.com. If you have questions, compliments, I guess hate mail, feel free to send us a message there as well. You can also add us on Twitter at @OutOfTokensCast or email us at freshoutoftokens@gmail.com. Musical accompaniment, the music you heard coming into the show, is provided by Mike Moody. You can hear more of her work at soundcloud.com/MikeMoody-1. All right. So, Johnny, we usually begin by asking you to tell us and our listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do if they're not familiar.
Okay. Well, I'm Johnny J, and I'm also known as the Brown Ball of Fury. I do a lot of different things. The main thing that I do right now is I am the founder of a tribe called Geek, where we focus on indigenerdity. I'm also the managing partner of Native Max Magazine, and we are the first native fashion magazine, and we've come a long way in the last couple of years, so it's really exciting to be a part of these two businesses that really focus on changing the way that natives are perceived in the media. I also do a lot of work with Native News Online, and I do a lot of advocacy work. I'm with the nonprofits Not Your Mascots and Live Indigenous OK, and I also do a lot of podcasting. I am the manager and producer for the Success Native Style Radio Networks, and so part of my responsibility is helping to develop new and different podcasts that focus on Indigenous perspectives on different issues that we're facing. We have a podcast for a tribe called Geek. We also just started a new podcast called Snaggin', which focuses on sex and love in Indian country.
Oh, very cool. I didn't actually know about some of those things, and I did some research just as prep for the podcast.
You know, some of the things, I'm really trying to kind of be covert, so some things kind of fly under the radar, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. You just listed off a magnificent list of things you do. Yeah, it is genuinely impressive. How do you, find the time for that? I can barely keep up with this show.
You don't sleep.
All right.
You say goodbye to sleep. Basically, it's a lot of planning. I usually plan my days today is Native Max, today is this, today I'm doing this. And then sometimes, with the evenings is usually when we do our podcast, which is really great because my evenings are usually really free. But it takes a lot of time, and a lot of, having to realize that sometimes you can't just go to the movies or you can't just go out and do whatever you want, because you have to remember that you got a podcast, you got articles that are due. And then usually by the time I go to sleep, it's usually about 2 or 3, maybe sometimes 4 or 5.
Yeah.
It's been really difficult, especially because I have this tendency to not say no if somebody needs my help. So it's I'll shuffle, but it does take a lot of planning and a lot of just realizing that, I got to be free at this time from this time, and, the house is going to be quiet from this time at this time, which is a struggle when you have a cat.
I believe you. I also have cats. Usually, the second question we ask, because we're primarily about video games, is what got you into gaming, but I don't think... Do you play video games? Or?
I do.
Ah, sweet. Let's talk about that then.
Well, I am old school. I still have my Nintendo, which my favorite thing to do, to de-stress, is to play Mario Brothers and time it and video it. And just kind of like try and see how fast I can make it through, and then whether or not I remember the different secret jumps and different passages that'll take you to that next level so you can skip some of the suckier ones. But, and I also like to play Halo. I think that's one of the first games where I was actually really, really addicted. And I played, like, I hate to admit this, but I think I played probably about like 14 hours straight when I first got it. And I was just like, oh my God, this is awesome. But video games, you know, there's good stress release.
Yeah, they absolutely can be.
And you can be aggressive and it's all right. you know, yelling at your TV and... But I love games like Halo. I think the other game that, and this I bought for my brother. He graduated eighth grade and I was like, okay, what can I get him? And I found this game called Silent Hill. I had no idea how addicting and creepy that game would be. And I remember playing it. He finally let me play, but they were gone. So I was home by myself playing Silent Hill. And every single light went on for like a week. I did not sleep with my light off. But that game was just like incredibly creepy. Like even the sequels, you know, like as they've kind of come on, it's just like, oh my God, why? And who thinks of this?
one thing about that series, if you pay attention to the soundtracks, it's clear that Akira Yamakawa, the primary composer, is getting more freedom, and he's just having so much fun coming up with weird music.
Yes, that's what's always been like incredible about it. Like the music, just the imagery, everything about those games is just beautiful and creepy. But, you know, one of the things I'm really interested in is, you know, now we're getting more of the virtual reality technology being more accessible, and they're starting to develop games for these platforms. And I think I read somewhere that it got scrapped, but I do know that they were trying to create a game regarding Silent Hill and virtual reality. And I kept thinking, oh my God, do you know how many people would die of heart attacks or, you know, just be running down the street, just like totally freaked out from that? Because I know they developed a game for Paranormal Activity. And, you know, people were going into trying this game thinking, oh, the movie sucked. And, you know, why would they do this? And there was a video on YouTube, and I can't remember his name, but he was, like, so jaded about the game. And then it was his turn, and he was absolutely hilarious because he was screaming, he was, like, jumping, and he even tried to kind of take off a little, and it was really funny.
So I don't really have a good transition here, but we wrote down the question, so I'm going to ask. Would you mind telling us, like, the origin story of A Tribe Called Geek, like, what inspired you and how you met up with the people who you work with?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm a huge, huge Doctor Who fan. I grew up on Doctor Who. One of my favorite memories with my dad is just being able to watch Doctor Who. And when they did the comeback, which is so glorious, I was so excited. But, you know, like with the media platforms that we have, you know, we focus a lot on native perspectives, and we focus especially with Native Max, which is where I really got into the media and working on that end. But we focus, everything is native centric, you know, from our writers to our photographers, our designers, everything with the magazine is native. So I didn't really have a place. And yeah, we have forums online where you could talk about Doctor Who or you could join other fandoms, but nothing from like a native perspective. And the more I started thinking about it, the more I started finding, you know, just like talking to people that I was interviewing for Native Max or meeting online, you know, I started to realize that, holy crap, we have a lot of native nerds who are into Doctor who, you know, who love Firefly and who are gamers and graphic novelists, and but we didn't have a platform. And so I was like, you know, maybe I should try something. And I had a couple friends help me out, and we got started in May of 2014, actually. And we started off as kind of like a social media platform, You could sign up, you could create your own profile, we had different forums, you could chat with each other, you could blog, and we are working on developing a digital magazine, much like Native Max, and it kind of got put on the back burner. My friends that were helping me kind of disappeared on me, and it was a little too much just to do on my own, and then Native Max was starting to take off and get really busy, so we kind of put it on the back burner for a little bit. And last year, my friend Jackie, she hosts Rose City Native Radio out of Portland, and me and her were guesting on each other's shows, just like back and forth, and then after the shows, we would be talking and about nerdy stuff. We'd be talking about comic books, we'd talk about video games, we'd be talking about just different things, and she finally was like, you know, we should host a show together, and I was like, yeah, that would be really awesome, and we were trying to think of a name because we wanted to talk about nerd stuff, and we were trying to think of a name, and I was like, you know, I have the domain name for A Tribe Called Geek, and she's like, what's that? So, like, I explained to her what we wanted to do and how we started out, and she's like, oh, yeah, well, let's do that. And so we used the name, and, you know, just because she's so amazing, and she's kind of, like, really been there to kind of pick up the slack. You know, we've been able to kind of start getting to that point where we're growing. We're not just the radio show anymore. We do have our website where we focus on highlighting and promoting indigenerdity. We focus on our making sure that our graphic novelists are taken care of. And, you know, it's a two-person operation, so yeah, we do things a little bit slower, but it gets there. But we do have the website, and then we also have a suicide awareness prevention initiative through A Tribe Called Geek called Indigenerds for Hope, which is one of my favorite things about being able to provide that platform, and is that we're able to reach out to other nerds, to other kids who may not feel like they have a community or feel like they belong anywhere, which is where we come in, because we're like, hey, you do belong here, and you have us. You know, we may not know each other in real life, but, you know, we can always network, we can communicate, and we're always here for you. So that's what I really love about what we do with A Tribe Called Geek, and that's basically how we got started.
Oh, very cool. I think you're right about, I think it's just like a subconscious bias. I remember I went to high school in Oklahoma, and, you know, every group of friends, yeah, we would play video games with our Native friends, but for some reason we just didn't think of them as nerds in the same way we were. And I don't, yeah, that's just, it's just something subconscious that just happens, and it's gross.
Yeah, and it, you know, and the other part of that is that, you know, our Native communities are, you know, it's okay to be an athlete, it's okay to be traditional, but there are some things that, you know, we don't think of as being Native, which is, you know, being a nerd, being a video gamer, or, you know, being part of different subcultures, like, you know, if you're goth or emo or whatever, like, these things are not normally associated with Natives. So there's a lot of lateral oppression that goes on when you identify as things that people don't think of as being Native. So it makes it really hard for our Native youth to feel like they belong somewhere, or that, you know, it's like you're constantly being paraded with this message that, oh, if you're into this or into that, you're an apple, red on the outside, white on the inside kind of thing. So it makes it hard. And with indigenerdity and being a nerd, being a geek, this is something that is oddly that we don't advertise. It's something that you kind of keep to yourself, which is why when you're talking to Natives and they're into this, you're like, oh, wow, I didn't know other Natives were into this, because we kind of have to hide it. And I don't know if that's something that we do on a conscious or subconscious level, but it's not something that we are, like, we're just now getting to that point where we can be proud of it. But, you know, like with A Tribe Called Geek, we tried to do a cosplayer of the month, and it's kind of ended up being like a cosplayer every couple of months. Because we know a lot of Native cosplayers, but they're scared to put themselves out there as being a cosplayer. Like, they're afraid of what other people may think of them at being a cosplayer. So it's really hard trying to get people a little more confident to step out there. And thankfully, we've had two really great cosplayers who, you know, are just like, hey, I'm a cosplayer, I'm proud, let's do this. And that would be Delana Ray Uses Knife, and Liz McKenzie, and they do some phenomenal cosplay. How I found Liz was I saw a picture that she did where she was an indigenous Rey from The Force Awakens, which was incredible because when you're looking at the Star Wars universe, there's a lot of Native inspiration that has always been part of the Star Wars series. So being able to see her do that Navajo version of Rey, it was just amazing.
Yeah, I feel like thinking back and just trying to like list off in my head all of the Native people I've met, I'm like, it seems like they actually sort of adopt these various subcultures at the same rate as every other human.
We do. You know, I think I was born to be a nerd.
It is weird that we don't think
we don't. And it's really hard to kind of like, even though we've always been a part of geek culture, if you really think about it, you're like, wait, I've never met a Native who was into this. Or, you know, it's not something you're like, oh, wait, really? But it's because, you know, like Native communities were just so marginalized and so underrepresented that it's hard for people to imagine us as being part of these different subcultures. And a lot of that has to do with the way that we've also been portrayed, you know, like in the media, but also through the education system. You know, when you're taught about Natives, you don't learn about us as modern people. So it's really hard to imagine us as not being these, I guess you would say, like figures of the past, and being kind of like the super uber traditional Natives that you hear about, you know, like that live in teepees, that, you know, just kind of like that embody all these different stereotypes, which is another reason, you know, like I really wanted to do A Tribe Called Geek, because my work, I really try to focus on shifting the way that we're perceived as Native. Like, hey, you know, yeah, you know, while a lot of people think of our tribes as being primitive or as not being that educated, when you really look at the base of different STEM fields, when you look at medicine, when you look at astronomy, you'll see a lot of Native or indigenous knowledge being utilized, you know, especially when you're looking at different things in psychology, even, you know, that things that we've been saying for years, they're just now starting to be able to say, like, oh, hey, you know, trauma may be woven in your DNA. It may have an effect on the way that your, you know, the future generations react to certain things, or the way that they behave based on the trauma of ancestors and that historical trauma. And it's like, yeah, we've been saying this forever. You know, it's like, thanks for catching up. But there's a lot of indigenous knowledge. You know, we had advanced star maps. You know, we had these incredible trade routes. You know, we had advanced mathematics. You know, we were, I kind of like to think of Natives as the original Monsanto, because we were creating different hybrids of corn. So, you know, there's a lot of things that just people don't realize, because they have this notion that we were like these primitive people, that we weren't doing anything with the land before colonization. So it's really good to kind of start highlighting some of that, but also highlighting our contributions now, you know, especially with our graphic novelists and, you know, like our Natives who are working in STEM fields and doing just these incredible things that really don't get recognized.
Also, I know from like doing research that there are definitely sites like, I think Poverty Point is one of them, where, you know, historians and archaeologists are like, there was a city here. If a European was put there, they would recognize it as a city, I mean.
As a city. Yeah, and that's the other thing, you know. A lot of people, I don't know if it's because our population has been so decimated that people have a hard time believing that we had villages that were as large as cities. And yeah, you know, a lot of our tribes were nomadic, but there were tribes that did settle permanently in places, and they had their own villages, and they were huge. It's really weird how there's this huge disconnect between being able to recognize indigenous people. Like, even though, you know, like when you look in the past, there were these great civilizations that people have no problem believing that they existed, right? Or that they were able to do these things. But when you look at Native communities, it's like, no way, no, you guys were doing nothing. You guys, you know, if it wasn't for colonization, you wouldn't know how to do this, or you wouldn't know how to do that. You wouldn't have computers. There's just a lot of things that get brought up when you talk about the reality of who Native people are. And I'm always laughing because I'm like, yo, you know, yeah, we may have been deemed primitive, but if it hadn't been for us showing you how to work the land and to grow food and to give you food, you guys would never have existed here in the first place, because those first explorers would have starved to death.
Isn't that a story that they tell us in school, the most sanitized white version of history,
where it's like Thanksgiving,
and then, you know, the natives helped us because we were all gonna die, and we repaid them with America's longest undeclared war.
Yes. That even today is still not recognized, and even when you do talk about it, it's like, nuh-uh. It's just, sometimes it can be frustrating, but, you know, I think the way that I think about things is that, you know, we've all been ingrained with so many prejudices. We've all been ingrained to believe these revisionist created ideas of who we are as people. And it's not something that we can undo overnight. You know, it's taken centuries to get us into the mess that we're in right now. And it's going to take probably even longer to get us out of it. But, you know, I see the progress that we're making. And yeah, sometimes, you know, it's really small. It's not as much progress as we would like at this point. But, you know, eventually it'll get there. It may, I have hope that it's going to get there.
In a previous episode, we had on a game developer who worked on a game about the Taino people, but he was a white guy, and, you know, he talked about, you know, all the consultants he had to get, and it was actually a really good example if you're in the production of something, you know. But I did feel like we definitely needed to get an actual native person on, maybe because I went to high school in Oklahoma.
Yeah, and you know, and it's really, I think that's another reason why I do what I do. Because a lot of times when we have conversations about Native issues, and when these conversations, especially when they happen within the media, they often happen without Native people. And so some of the things get muddled, some of the things get misrepresented, and it creates a lot of misconceptions. But it also creates a lot of hard feelings towards the Native community, because, you know, so many of these issues, it's, people have this idea that we get free tuition everywhere, that, you know, we don't pay taxes, that we're getting a lot of things for free. And it creates these hard feelings, like, why are we complaining about anything when we're getting this and this and this and this? But the reality is that, you know, a lot of what we get through, especially through funding, like, these are... it's kind of like a payoff in a way, you know, like these were treaty agreements in order to kind of, I don't want to say make up, because they're definitely not like reparations, but it's kind of like, but it is kind of like a payoff, you know, like, okay, we did this to your people. We put you on these reservations. So now because, you know, like there's still this thing that we're like wards of the government, that we're going to fund you so much this year. A lot of this was put in treaties, and over the years, you know, like with inflation, yeah, you know, just like anything else, you know, that payment to our tribes, it goes up. Except now, you know, like they're constantly cutting funding to our different nations, which puts us in a really bad situation. You know, like we do have high levels of poverty, and because our communities sometimes are so rural, we don't have a lot of access to jobs, and there's not a lot of jobs that can be created within our communities as well, because of just how rural we are, and the fact that a lot of the places where we've been settled, especially, you know, like here in Oklahoma, the reason we natives were relocated to this state and to this land was because they deemed it unlivable. It wasn't something that they wanted to deal with. They, you know, they couldn't use the land. They were thinking, oh, you can't farm on this, you can't do this.
It is a terrible place.
Yes. Yes. But, you know, but natives, of course, we came here and we learned to thrive. You know, like we learned how to work the land. We learned what could grow here. And then once we started getting settled, then of course, you know, they're like, oh, okay.
Oh, people can live there. Well, I guess.
Well, it's like, okay, time to take it over again. So then, of course, you had the land runs. And again, this is something that I always laugh at, because people think that when the land runs happened, like this was just wide open land. You look at movies like, what was it with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman?
Far and Away.
It's called Far and Away. Yeah. But you look at that, and when they're doing the land run, you know, it's just like wide open land. But when these land runs happened, they actually came in and overtook entire communities. They took houses that were already built. And a lot of people don't realize that before the land runs here in Oklahoma, you know, we had villages, you know, we had cities, we had entire black communities that were just overrun by these land runs. And people were forced out of their homes. People were forced out of these cities as, you know, more and more settlers came in. And a lot of people don't realize, you know, that there were already people here. There were already cities here that were just overtaken.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people there don't realize it.
Yes. It's true. Because
I honestly think I watched Far and Away in history class.
Yeah. I think that's one of the first places I've seen the movie, because it's not something I would have watched on my own. But I do remember, I want to say there was a sex scene in there that got really awkward, which is one of the only things I remember about watching it in school, is the teacher kind of running up and being like, oh no, you know, like, what do I do? But yeah, you know, a lot of people here don't realize that history. I mean, even me, I did not know this until like this past year. Like, that's when I first learned that, holy crap, there were cities here. You know what I mean? And I learned that because I was getting to witness a really cool program here in Oklahoma that they're trying to get in schools to replace the land runs. And it's called Oklahoma History Days. And it was really amazing what they were able to do, because they were able to share Oklahoma history from the Native perspective, from the settler perspective, but also from the perspective of freed black men and freedmen that were here. So it was really great to be able to see all these different perspectives. And it was just really amazing. Like, I learned so much about Oklahoma history that I had never learned before, you know, that we had cities here and that we had entire black communities prior to the land runs. You know, I had no idea that the state was so diverse until I got to witness that program. And it was just like, wow. It's like mind blown. And then being able to see these kids, they were introduced to 5 different native languages, and they only had 30 minutes with each of these sessions. But at the end of the day, it was so amazing to me that just having that in that short amount of time that they were able to be exposed to these languages, that they could tell you what words were from what language that they learned. Like, they were able to remember that, and they were able to say these words, and I was just like, wow. Because, you know, I'm trying to learn my languages now, and it is so difficult when you're coming from that, I guess you would say, old brain. You know, that's already so used to speaking English. And so it's really difficult to learn your native languages. Being able to see these kids pick it up so quickly, it was just phenomenal.
So I think we'd also like to touch on what, do you have any interesting things coming up? Or I think you already mentioned some.
Yeah, you know, we do have some great stuff coming up. The thing that I am so excited about right now is Indigenous Comic-Con. The very first Indigenous Comic-Con. You know, our Native nerd community is just amazing. You know, like, even though some of us have never met in real life, you know, like, we're friends on Facebook, we're friends on Twitter, and we support each other. So it's going to be really amazing for us all to be in this one central place at the same time and to be able to get to meet each other outside of the internet. And that's one of the things that I am so excited about with Indigenous Comic-Con, because we do have some amazing graphic novelists who are coming down from Canada. It's going to be awesome. And we're going to get to see, you know, more Native cosplayers, and we're going to get to really show, you know, the scope of our contributions to geek culture with this. And that's going to be happening in November. You know, I'm just so excited about it. And right now, people, there's an Indigenerd special, early nerd special that's going on for tickets. And you can find that at indigenouscomiccon.com. But check it out, because this is going to be like one of those events that you really don't want to miss. This is one thing that I am just so super excited about, because I know a bunch of us are probably going to meet each other and be squealing like schoolgirls. Because it's like, oh my God, you're my favorite person ever. But, you know, I really just love our Indigenous community, and just being able to share that, it's going to be exciting.
So I think it's time we should move on to the listener questions.
Oh, goody.
So, Tim, who is a friend of the show, he always has a few questions for our guests. And I'm going to begin with the what I imagine would be the most unpleasant one. He asks,
What are some of the worst tropes media creators won't seem to stop using?
All of them. You know, I think the worst, and I think this is what does the most harm for Native people, are just these hyper-sexualized images of Native women. And even of our men, I think these are very harmful because our communities do suffer like high, just abnormally rates of sexual violence, of abuse towards Indigenous women especially. And a lot of people don't make that correlation, but it's really hard for people who don't witness that impact or who don't have to live with it to even imagine that something as, you know, like to imagine that a girl wearing a headdress in a skimpy, you know, leather fringed outfit could possibly have any harm on Indigenous people. But it does, because it shifts the way that people view us. And, you know, historically, Native women have been specifically targeted for violence because, you know, we are the life givers. We're the ones who birthed these nations. And if you put a stop to that, well, you put a stop to the existence of Native people because, you know, no more are going to be born. So we have always been targeted for sexual violence, especially. But it's hard for people to make that connection to that. And even with the other tropes that exist, the Native savage, the noble savage, the Native warrior, while a lot of these things people think, well, isn't it a positive thing that we see you as being strong, that we see you as being brave? No, because these are not who we are. They are not inspired by who we are or who we were as Indigenous people. These were Eurocentric created stereotypes, a reimagining of who we were, and they were created to either justify the genocide of Native people and to justify the violence and the oppression of Native people, or to make it seem like it wasn't that bad, that Natives weren't as savage, that, oh no, we never said Natives were savage. It was just to kind of shift that conversation and portray things in a more positive light, like, oh, well, if it wasn't for, you know, colonization, well, these Natives wouldn't have been this, they wouldn't have done this, blah, 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 blah. But all of these tropes that exist are incredibly harmful because it renders us invisible. The hypervisibility of all these tropes, they render us as Native people, as the actual living human beings who, just like any other human, you know, we're so diverse. We have these wide range of emotions. You know, we have good people, we have bad people, we have smart people, and we have, you know, the village idiots too, just like any other people. But it renders us invisible, and people have these totally harmful misconceptions of Native people, that we're a monolith. So they don't see us as being diverse. They don't see the different cultures and the different traditions and just the beauty of who we are as Native people. They don't see that. They just see the poverty porn that is out in the media. They see all these different stereotypes. They see the Native mascots, and that's it. And the sad thing is that those tropes, that those mascots are more accepted in society than we are as the actual living human beings and Native people that we are.
Yeah, that is, like, I would say measurably true. Like,
oh, yeah.
So there's no reason for anyone to argue with it. So he also asks, what are a few of your favorite examples of good Indigenous representation in geek-centered media?
Tribal Force, Captain Paiute, Kagaji, and if you go to Native Realities Press, they have some amazing Native-created comic books that they promote. There's one that I absolutely love that deals with violence towards Indigenous women, and it's called Dear Woman. And Dear Woman is like a creature that we all fear here in the plains, you know, and we all hear about it. It's something that's familiar with Native culture. And for them to kind of take this character that is feared, to kind of make her into an avenger for Native women, was really cool. It was really cool to see how they were able to use that. And I know a lot of people would probably think too, you know, like depending on the tribe, that it was taboo and they don't agree with it. But, you know, I thought it was really cool to see this figure of our folklore that has such a negative connotation being used for something a little more positive. But there's some really great Native comic books out there. And The Chickasaw Kid, which is a comic book series that I found when I was at a conference. They gave us all copies, and I was just like, oh, wow. Like, and I still don't know who the artist is, because the name of the artist, the name of the writer, it's not mentioned in the comic book at all. So it's just kind of like this little mystery publication, because I cannot seem to find out who did this. But it's so great. And there's a new comic book that's being created by Elizabeth LaPonce, and I'm going to butcher his last name, but his name's Mitchell, and I think it's Bercier. But they have a great comic book that's coming up that deals with gender and sexual identity from an Indigenous perspective. So I'm really excited to see what that's going to be, because I've seen some initial artwork and it's beautiful.
I will have to look up all those things because I'm terrible. they sound good. I mean, that's why I would look them up.
Yeah, and Kagaji, Jay Ojek created this, and he actually has a new comic book series, and which is something else I'm really excited about, is that, you know, like for the longest time, whenever we do things as Native people, we try to keep them positive. And a lot of these things have been youth oriented, just because, you know, we want to expose our youth to different representation, to healthier representation of who they are. But Kagaji was made into an animated series that airs on I think it was CBC in Canada, but it's now here in the U.S. on FNX, which is the First Nations Experience channel. It's an amazing series that people should check out. And then also, you know, again, he's got this new comic book, which I'm really excited about, because it's a shift in things that Natives are doing here in Indian Country, is which we're getting more gritty and we're getting a little more comfortable and brave enough to show a little bit of that darker side. But he's got this great new comic series called The Outlander, and it's dealing with a Native in the post-apocalyptic world. Excuse me, people. Tongue twister there, but yeah, but it's a great series. Like, he gave out the first issue, and I was just like, holy cow, like, this is awesome to finally see something a little grittier from a Native perspective, because it is absolutely filled with gratuitous violence, and it's beautiful. But yeah, you know, it's really great to see this shift that we're being a little more comfortable to show these different sides of who we are, you know, the good, the bad, and just being more comfortable with that.
I can definitely see why there would be this pressure to appear as, like, passive or peaceful as possible, when a lot of the previous examples people are exposed to is propaganda from America's most genocidal period.
There is ton of pressure to not embody some of these stereotypes. But, you know, I really love that some of our storytellers are being a little more comfortable with stepping outside of that box. Because The Outlander, like, oh my God, I want him to hurry up with this. And I told him, I said, I'm probably going to be like on your case, like, are you done yet? Are you done yet? Are you done yet? Because it's just, I want to know what happens. I want to know what else is going to go on in this world and just how it is all going to play out, because that first issue just, like, really gets you.
The next question Tim asks is, What story would you love to see done right in a game?
In a game? You remember the video game, The Oregon Trail?
The one from the school computers, yeah?
Yes, the one from the school computers that everybody has played.
I think that's a universal experience.
Yes, I would love to see an Indigenous version of that game. And talk about the reality of that, because it was an early exposure for people to, you know, settler life, like actually having to figure out, okay, well, what do we need? How do we do this kind of thing? So it would be really neat to see that from a Native perspective, like, okay, well, how are we dealing with settlers coming in? How are we dealing with surviving in lands that we're not familiar with, and with foods that we're not familiar with? And, you know, and it kind of goes back to just showing, you know, like these different sides of our history, you know, whether it was good, whether it's bad, you know, it brought us to this point right now, and we have to deal with it. And so I think I'd love to see an indigenous version of that game. I would also like to see, let's see, what would be a good one? Custer's Last Stand. I think that would be a really interesting game if it was done right, because, you know, that took a lot of coordination. It would be kind of like Risk, but I think that would be a really cool game to see done from an indigenous perspective. And also, I would like to see some of these games, because, you know, like, we have native characters in some of these mainstream games, but they're all so tropey and stereotypical. And it would be great to see that rectified, so that when we play these games, because, you know, we love video games, but it would really be really cool to be able to go back and play some of these characters and not be like rolling your eyes like, really, really, spirit animal. And I don't know if anyone's ever played this, but there's a really cool video that deals with the Pocahontas game, video game. I think it was for Dreamcast. I think it might have been for the Sony PlayStation. But they had a video game based on the Disney movie. But there's a video of a native playing this game. Talon. But, you know, he played this video game and he was kind of doing like indigenous commentary to it. But I would like to see that game done right, too, and just tell the real story of Pocahontas, because it was not all talking animals and painting with all the colors of the wind. But I think, yeah, I would just like to see a lot of these just fixed, you know, not necessarily reinvented, but there's some easy fix to these characters, you know. It's just taking the time to actually do it. But I think any of our characters in fighting games, those are the ones that I would really like to see fixed first, because that's how I take out my aggression. I love that people want to incorporate us into games. I do, because it's, we're so underrepresented, and so it is good to have representation, but that representation needs to be healthy. And sometimes I feel like a lot of people are like, well, how do we get around not being disrespectful? So a lot of them think that is to create fictional tribes and to set them in places where there were actually native tribes. And for me, I think the easiest way to represent Native people, if you know, especially as non-Natives, consult with Native people and be tribal specific and collaborate with that tribe, because we do want representation. We want to be seen in video games. And you can do that so easily, and there is no shortage of natives from different tribes that would be willing to help. You know what I mean? And it's like, we do have video game developers too, but I really love that people want to incorporate us in video games, because there is a need for indigenous-based games, and they can absolutely be successful. I don't know if you heard of the game Never Alone.
Oh, yeah, it sounds, yeah, that's...
Yeah, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's blown people's minds in the video game world. And it's, you know, it's just a really beautiful representation of what indigenous people in video games could be if you take the time to be tribal specific, if you take the time to actually learn about these people that you want to pay homage to in video games.
So that would be basically like paying them the same respect cities get. Because, you know, if someone wants to set something in Baltimore, they check out Baltimore.
Absolutely.
And his last question is, what is your favorite part of working with a tribe called Geek?
Being around indigeners. You know, it's okay for me to geek out. It's okay for us to be spazzy. We get each other. But, you know, I think my favorite thing is the support system, that whole network that we have. And I was just bragging about this because I went away for 2 weeks. I had no technology. I have T-Mobile, so anytime I go anywhere, you know, while other people have service, I don't. So I was up in the mountains at this summer camp for Indian Youth of America, and I had no service, and I knew I wasn't going to have service. But I was worried about our social media accounts. Like, were they going to go silent? Were they going to go dead? And I really love that I could count on some of our indigeners to step up into those roles for me while I was gone and to take care of things. You know, Talon, he's just wonderful. He's been one of our biggest supporters from the very get-go. But he took over our social media for us, and he did some really cool things. He did, like, you know, top 10 horror movies, and he was on our Twitter. And, you know, it's like when I came back, I was like, oh, my God, thank you, thank you, thank you. Nothing went dead. But I love that support system that we have, because it's like anytime we need each other, like, we are always there to offer our hand and just to make sure that no nerd gets left behind.
It is wonderful to see that develop. The world before that seems terrible, and people lived there.
Yep. And, you know, I see that change. You know, there's so many horrible things that go on in the world, and for me, I find it really hard to be discouraged these days. You know, even though we are dealing with such terrible losses, such terrible violence, I find it hard to be discouraged because I am surrounded by people who are working to change that. And I see other people, not just from, you know, the Native community, but from the Black community, from even the white community, from all these different communities, from all these different walks of life, from all these different ages. You know, I see all of these people doing such tremendous work to try and change that. And so I find it really hard to be discouraged because I know that all this work is going on. And I know that, you know, while it seems bleak right now, I know that eventually we're going to break through and something really good is going to come out of all of this. It's just really hard for us to see it now when we're dealing with it on such an immediate basis. But, you know, I know it's going to get there. And yeah, you know, sometimes I get down, like, especially like the last 2 days with, you know, the just... Okay, I've seen things in the last 2 days that you can't unsee.
Yeah, video autoplay is the devil.
Yes, it's, and you don't want to see that. And, you know, like, yeah, you get angry, you get hurt, you get sad because you see that and you know that this is somebody's father, it's somebody's son, it's somebody's dad, it's somebody's brother. And it can, and, you know, it gets overwhelming, and a lot of people always ask me, well, how do you deal with that? Because, you know, I deal with so many of these different issues that are so heavy and overwhelming, and for me, you know, I am so fortunate to be around other people who are working towards the same thing, so I see that work, and I see that hope, but, you know, I also work with our youth, and I think that kind of helps center, you know, because our youth, you know, yeah, they're dealing with these issues too, but there's still so much fire, so much innocence in them that, you know, it's like, okay, you know, this is what it's like to, you know, be a youth and just to be at that point where you're just now starting to explore the world and what's capable. And sometimes that's really funny to see because these kids have such imagination and their laughter, their, you know, just being able to see them smile in spite of everything that is going on in the world, you know, that kind of reminds us that, yeah, there's still good. We just have to fight a little harder to see it as adults.
Yeah, absolutely. We usually wind down to the end of the show with what we're playing or reading, what sort of, is there like any media you're consuming right now, I guess would be the question. Any story you're into?
There is. Okay, I know this is going to sound really funny, but there's, on YouTube, there is this guy who goes through and he basically ruins movies from your childhood. But I am obsessed with him right now. Because he does this commentary, like, he's, so far he's ruined The Labyrinth for me. He's ruined Dark Crystal. He has, like, this angry black man persona that he takes, and he's just hilarious because he's so just, like, matter of fact. Like, so basically what he did with Labyrinth is he turned the Goblin King into a drug pusher. You know, because he's constantly trying to give Sarah the crystals, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna take your kid, and in return let me give you this crystal meth. And then he's talking about, you know, the dream sequence, and he's talking about it being one of her hallucinations, and it's I can never watch Labyrinth the same way without thinking about that and just thinking about how uber creepy, you know, he made it. But he did that with Dark Crystal. He's done that with several movies. The one he did on Deep Blue Sea, which was the shark movie with Samuel L. Jackson and Thomas Jane. I think that's my favorite right now. But I'm obsessed with him, and I am obsessed with, well, I like to read. So right now I've been obsessed with reading some of the new books that have been coming out. I just read Gerald Weisner's Treaty Shirts, and it's an allegorical novel, and it's, for me, it's kind of hard to get through, but it's absolutely beautiful because it deals with a lot of different treaty rights. So, you know, there's a lot of, I guess you would say, like, more political and technical writing involved within these stories, and trying to, you know, it's an allegory. So it's, so when you're used to reading just like a straight out novel, you know, it's a little easier. But when you know from the get-go that there's a deeper meaning or something, you know, like when you're reading, you're constantly trying to figure it out, like before you get to the end. That's the same way it is with this book, but it's absolutely beautiful because it deals with so many different issues that we deal with in Indian country and within, specifically within our tribal communities. But it's really beautiful. The characters are just amazing. And some of the lines are things that we say on a daily basis. And I love it. I also love The Lesser Blessed is one of my favorite books of all time. And it's one of those books that I could just keep reading over and over and over. And it's been made into a movie. And the movie is pretty good too. But I really love the book. Because it really embodies more of that duality of how we deal with trauma. You know, it's within our Native communities, you know, the things that we've gone through, you know, they're so painful. And that trauma, you know, it still exists and we still are impacted by it. But we've learned to deal with that through humor, through laughter. And people always kind of freak out when they come to Native funerals. Because there's a lot of laughter that happens. But that's how we've learned to deal. So I really love the book because it kind of shows that. It shows how we kind of combat being overwhelmed by our trauma with humor. And, you know, what? And for the most part, yeah, it's inappropriate humor. But, you know, we do that as a, it's kind of like self-preservation. But I really love The Lesser Blessed because of that. And so sometimes, again, you know, when things get a little overwhelming, or I start feeling a little down, you know, I read that book because it's just, for me, it's just a good reminder that things get hard, and that we have to deal with a lot of bullshit that other people don't, but it's something that we can absolutely learn to live with and to thrive in spite of it, that it doesn't have to necessarily define everything about who we are. But for me, you know, The Lesser Blessed, like the, that right now, that's just the media that I'm consuming.
Cool. I've been mostly to wind down is playing Sid Meier's Pirates, which is a game with awful representation of everyone in it. So it's just pure mechanic.
Oh yeah, and if you want a game, I should have mentioned this too, is one of the things that I do, that I consume, that I am obsessed with, that I get addicted to. There is a game that was created by Elizabeth LaPonce that was inspired by a t-shirt that Stephen Paul Judd did, and it's called Invaders, and it's basically like Space Invaders, but instead of a spaceship, you have a native fighting the aliens with a bow and arrow. And I am obsessed with that game, and you get obsessed because, one, the game is hard as balls. It is just so, and it doesn't seem like it because, you know, you're just hitting the button, you're pushing arrows, but it is so difficult because you cannot go and you cannot slide to the other side as fast as you want. So to get these high scores, and we actually had a contest for A Tribe Called Geek to kind of promote this game and to get people playing and supporting Native created video games. But it was funny to see how obsessed people got with trying to get that high score, because we told them you can send in as many scores as you want. So we had people, like, on a daily basis sending their next highest score. And I'm sitting there, like, all proud of myself because I was, like, in the 60,000. And then I start getting these screenshots of people who have like 100,000 points, 300,000 points. And I'm like, how? Because with each level, it just gets like harder and harder, and the more bombs they start dropping. And I'm like, what is this magic you guys are doing that you can get beyond 100,000 points? But that game, you know, it's so addicting. I recommend everybody play it. It's on Android and Apple, but it's just so annoyingly addictive.
It might be time to go towards the end. Do you want to tell people where they can find you? I know it's a lot of places.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Facebook, Johnny J. It's JohnnieJae. And you can also find A Tribe Called Geek on Facebook and Twitter as well. On Facebook, it's A Tribe Called Geek. On Twitter, it's Tribe Called Geek. And let's see, where else? You can also find us at www.atribecalledgeek.com. And for Indigenous Comic-Con, absolutely add us on Facebook, on Twitter, and check out the website and keep updated. We do have the Early Nerd Special that's going on till the end of this month, so take advantage because this is going to be an awesome event. But you can find more about Indigenous Comic-Con at www.indigenouscomiccon.com. And if you're interested in any of the podcasts that I do, you can always find that at www.successnativestyle.rocks.
Awesome. And as anyone listening to this has probably heard before, you can find me on Twitter at Red Conversation. You can find me on Patreon at patreon.com/redconversation, where I put up like a test chapter for a novel I'm thinking about. If you give me a dollar, you can read it.
I should do that.
And that's basically it. Tanya isn't here, but she can be found as Cipher of Tear most everywhere, according to her. And she's on Twitch, Twitter, Patreon. And this show is primarily produced by I Need Diverse Games, which you can find at patreon.com/INeedDIVGMS. I think that's it. We'll be right back.